All right, welcome to the Dadpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Oliveira. Today, I have a really special guest that aligns with you. I mean, I know our listeners are entrepreneurs, parents, marketers. There's a mixed bag, but one thing that we all have in common is we love entrepreneurship. There's a lot of startup founders, and we all have the same problems at different phases, right? But the problem that our guest today is solving is a big one. Because there's a million ways that you can search for ways to fund your operation, your startup. You know, you can go for credit cards. That's not so good. You can hit up your family, friends and family. That's okay sometimes. You can go to Shark Tank. Probably won't work. You can go the traditional, you know, investor. And there's seed investor and all types of other ways that you can raise money. But that's tiring. You know, we know people who have presented 500 times before they got a yes. Like, we brought them on this podcast to talk about it. We actually had a Shark Tank entrepreneur on here before. So I've seen all the different ways in the last 20 years. But what Chris has built is a platform called Gusher. And Chris, it's like I'm so excited to talk about this that I can't even properly introduce you. So without further ado, Chris Joyce, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Awesome. So how do I make this like mystery and how do we attack it at the end? No. What you're doing is the funding piece, which we know is the number one reason why startups fail, not because they don't have a great product or market demand. It's just funding. Like, you run out of funding and it's like, oh, it's over. So how are you trying to solve that problem? Or I guess before we start there, give us the quick background on the probably dozens of companies that you started. Probably sure. Most succeeded, some maybe not. So talk to us about that first.
Sure. I've started more than 24 companies in all different industries, everything from consumer goods, manufacturing, medical devices, you name it. My products have been sold in more than 11,000 stores in 23 countries. I've got technical patents on stuff like video messaging, and my tech products have users in more than 148 countries across the globe. And I've just started businesses from the time I was very, very young. And I learned at an early age how to start businesses really with nothing. I mean, no money required. And to this day, when I say that to people, that no money is required at all, I mean, zero, nada, zippo, until you get to really the $10 million level, then money's required for like land grabs or doing specific taking over verticals, but nothing to get to that level at all is needed, that their eyes kind of glaze over in disbelief until they actually do it. And so what we do is we really help entrepreneurs be able to get going with nothing. And we don't ask ever for money. We don't do anything for money. But what we are, Gusher is a performance-based equity platform. What that means is people join companies in exchange for performance-based equity. So they get a piece of the pie to help make that company work, to help make that company come to life. And what I usually say to founders is, imagine that you had $1 million or $2 million in the bank account right this second. Whatever you would spend that on, you Gusher. You use that to create your team. And so anything you can imagine, you can do, from marketing to distribution to manufacturing to being able to create the company, the brands, the logos, whatever it may be, bringing on your CFO, your CTO, you're having development done. You can all do that using the equity of your company, starting with $0, nothing, zippo.
I love it because in my experience in the last, you know, 20 plus years in business is there are so many experienced people who are in a position where they could do extra work. They could take on an extra 5-10 hours a week, no problem. And then there's a ton of retired people who are really, really smart and worked in, you know, in high level jobs that could help you. But I agree with you. The way you said that, Chris, it's like, it's as if you had the money sitting in your account. All you have to do is obviously marry the two. Does the product or service appeal that marketer, chief marketing officer or CFO? And then they go to work for you. You exchange for equity. You get to grow.
That's it. And what's more important is you got to think to yourself, who would join a company for a paycheck? Well, anybody would join because it covers their expenses. But who in their right mind would join a company for equity? if the only reason they would join is if they fundamentally believed in what you're doing. So what it does from the beginning, it makes you aligned with your team. And so instead of creating a minimum viable product, what ends up happening is you're actually able to create a market viable product and become self-sustaining almost from the get-go. And so that's really what we do with our teams and our people when we help them create them, is really teach them that, to create that self-sustaining company from the very beginning. And it's really great to be able to do that, because when these people join your company, usually the ones that join are very top-level people, the best at what they do. Why? They've already made money. They have excess capacity. They have excess time. And so they're learning to go ahead, or not learning, but they're really looking to make an impact versus really just going ahead and getting a paycheck. They're looking to make an impact, get another horse in the race, basically be their own VC and actually get involved with these companies because they really like what you're working on.
Right. It's to me, it's interesting too. I was on there and how you can search by the role, right?
Sure.
And then you have the startups. So I noticed that a lot of the cap table is usually in the single percentage.
Yes, point, exactly. Right?
So talk to us about that, because you know, sure. Typically they go on Shark Tank and they're like, "Here, I want 100 grand."
No.
But they're like 30%. You're like, "What?"
Yeah, my kids laugh at me because when they turn on Shark Tank or something like that, my head just explodes. So what we teach founders is that as a founder, you need to retain a minimum of 80% equity when you're gushing a deal, when you're doing this deal and being able to bring it to market. So that first round of people, the people to get it off the ground, should take less equity than 20%.
Okay.
So something like, and the reason is because if you don't do that and you make a mistake and you give too much equity, what'll end up happening is you as founder, not now, but down the line, a year from now, 2 years from now, you'll become disincentivized and the deal turns upside down. And it's very hard to right side that up. So the most motivated person to do your company is you as founder. And we fundamentally believe that the founder is the primary person bringing that sled up the mountain. But the team actually helps get it going also. But the compensation is much lower than a person would think. It's really single digit equity numbers.
Is this something that, you know, prior to starting Gusher, through all the different companies you started, was this an approach that you took?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because there was no such thing as a venture capital ecosystem. I grew up in Ohio and Fairborn, Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, but I went to NYU. And so even in New York at the time, after I was a stockbroker there, I learned that, you know, putting the deals together, we never needed money. We would call it finagling. So if we needed real estate, well, we brought the real estate developer owner in and they take 10% of the gross or something like that. But they'd go ahead and do all the build out, everything else. And we start doing deals that way. If we need marketing, distribution, press, well, every damn publication had excess capacity, extra pages at that time that they didn't sell, that we'd be able to work deals or revenue shares with. So it basically grew out from there. So I didn't come from money. I don't have a lot of money at that time. So I had to figure a way to go ahead and do it. And we built numerous companies up that way, never needing anything. I mean, literally anything. We would do deals with printers. We would do deals with magazines when we first started out. But right now we do deals with web publishing companies, with marketing companies, with everything. You don't need a penny. Zero.
Yeah. And, you know, at first when we came across your platform and, of course, everything that you're doing, Chris, I was like, well, is this a crowdfunding site? But like when you get in there, it's something that is so new, honestly, to myself. I mean, I've done deals like that. I own a marketing agency and for years we've been doing it that way, where a business comes in, they want to grow. They're like, look, we don't have the $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month needed to run ads. Right. We'll invest in them and we'll say, you know what? Won't cost you a penny. It's all performance based. If we hit those KPIs, then we're going to take equity, which
Absolutely.
Is super unique, and very few marketing agencies are willing to do it that way.
Yep.
We're always willing to do it, but we have to be very selective. And so it's like you got to kiss so many frogs to get to like the prince, and it's so time consuming. And what I realized, like when I was on the platform on Gusher, I was talking about this with several of my co-founders in different ventures. I'm like, guys, we can really build out our startups here. I have a few other startups.
Right.
By just finding the right talent, because it's very hard to do it through, you know, Upwork or LinkedIn, through it's just very hard because it's not structured in a way where you probably have to invest a couple hundred hours for one position. Easily. And you may still end up at a, all right, so you.
So we've got the recruit. Well, we've had it where complete teams have come together in as little as 2 hours. But the average time it typically takes to get a full extended team with a first-time founder is about 4 to 6 weeks. But that doesn't mean that they're working constantly 4 to 6 weeks. It's just that that's the flow of people. The average recruiting time to get somebody involved in your company, listen to this, has just gone from, like, we figured a new methodology out, from a couple hours down to about 6 minutes. So we've got it down to really the time does not take that much to invest in to really be able to get the right people involved in your company. We've got it down to a science.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's so important because you talk to anyone in that is successful, the team and the talent is always the hardest thing. And that to me is always tied to funding. Like if you don't have good funding, I'm sorry, you're not going to get the best talent out there. So it's as if you're in this sense, not for the startups, but for the other side of the talent, right? The roles, it's as if you're curating and building out this super directory of people who A, have that super talent, right? Like they're high level. Sure. B, they're willing to work on this new business model. I'm really excited about this episode because I don't think that there's anything else out there. So speaking of which, do you have like a close competitor out there?
No, nothing exists like it. So think of it like this, okay? What's the most important thing to think about, or if somebody comes away from listening to you in this podcast and they, let's say, don't do Gusher at all, is something, a concept called VIM, V-I-M, the vested interest market. These are the people that have the most to gain from the success or failure of your company. As a founder, if you're building a company, using Gusher or not using a Gusher, you want to make your team built up of them, these people that really get what you're doing. So you're starting a dog food company, you want to make damn sure that all those people on your team are dog owners, they're dog zealots, they get what you're doing. If you're creating an electronics device company, you want to make damn sure that all those people really have a problem that's associated with that device can fix. If you're creating a diabetic product, you damn well better have your people that have all diabetes, or their family members or kids have diabetes, because those are the teams that have higher success rates, because they get it. They have a vested interest in what you're creating. And so that creates a higher success rate, much higher success rate than just putting the money in front and recruiting a team on that basis.
Absolutely. I mean, I on the investor side, I'm invested into a few like groups like the Syndicate and Launch and others. And it's so different there in that, okay, so you might invest $5,000 here or 20, whatever you want to invest. But you know, you're merely a very tiny shareholder and you're giving them money. And I'm looking at some of these startups that I've invested in over the years. And it's like, I'll reach out to the CEO and talk to them and say, oh, did you know I invested in you? Might be just a small amount of shares, but did you know that your marketing team, or, you know, they're not doing such a hot job. Here's another opportunity here, but we don't have that conversation. Right. So it's like, to your point, Chris, just giving them the money is not enough.
Right. We have a saying. We say good deal first, money second. And I'll tell you that it's like my religion. Good deal first, money second. Good deal first, money second. So what happens is when you do that and you put the good deal first, what happens is the companies that are created using that methodology, the way that we do it, are created foundationally better. So, you know, one of the things that companies make a mistake on when they get funded is they don't put sales and marketing first. All right, they don't put it as a priority. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, to SaaS companies or tech companies or medical device companies, I go, you're not a medical device company. You're not a tech company. You're not a SaaS company. You're not a consumer goods company. You are first and foremost a sales and marketing company. And when you put these teams together with that at the top of importance, the companies and products that are created are really way higher. And that's why we say you leapfrog generational development when you do that. Instead of going for years and making iterations and hopefully finding this magical product market fit, the whole point is to create that from the very beginning, to be self-sustaining and generate revenue.
So, you know, being a very experienced founder yourself, you know, when we have a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to the show here and will reach out to me and say, hey, I need this or I need that. And I try to connect people. But it's like, because of shows like Shark Tank and the culture out there, and because of like, even like the internet world, the influencer world, creator world, where such a small percentage of, there are outliers, but there are a very small number of them. Very. And people think that everyone gets from here to here overnight. Talk to me about the startups that are on Gusher and sort of like what you're hearing out there, because I know the economy is changing, the market is changing all the time after COVID. You know, I feel like there's still this like lack of conversation in the entrepreneurial world to communicate to these founders, especially first time. So first time founders, especially, that you have to be realistic. And I'm saying this specifically, Chris, because I recently had a founder that came to us, you know, very basic. I mean, beyond beta, but kind of MVP. And hey, I want to get from here to here in 6 months. Like, not realistic.
Yep.
Could happen.
Sure.
But if you looked at like your 100 other competitors, they all took 24 to 36 months and they were funded and they had the people. So you're saying you alone are going to get from here to here. So how do you combat that? And I know that that's not your job to do. Sure, I'm just asking you that as an experienced entrepreneur.
Well, what's your advice? There's a thing. First of all, delayed gratification, you have to master. Delayed gratification comes first and foremost. The fairy tale of Silicon Valley is exactly that. It's a fairy tale. So the whole fairy tale of, hey, you've got this thing in your garage, you're handed a check, and the next year you're worth $1 billion and you're a unicorn, good luck. Yes, certain people have achieved that, no doubt about it. But when you start digging in deeper to the venture capital world, the statistics speak for themselves. Overall, the VC industry, if you throw at the top 1 or 2%, has a negative ROI of 1 or 2%. All right, so literally the whole industry is kind of fluff. But then also, if you take into consideration what your chances are of raising capital, you always hear this 1 out of 100. It's not. It's about a minimum of 1 out of 500 to 1 out of 3,500 deals that crosses a VC's desk actually ends up getting funded. And then it's a very specific pattern of deal that they're looking for. And usually that's something that can give them a great, you know, potential return, et cetera, et cetera. But the vast majority of deals don't fall into that category. So your chances of a business going ahead and really getting funding from an idea standpoint is almost nil. It's almost non-existent. So with us on our platform, I don't usually give out this number, but we've got greater than an 80% success rate where these companies become self-sustaining and or attract larger scale capital. And the way we know they're going to be successful is not because we're sitting there running the numbers and doing due diligence. Mm-hmm. It's based upon the founder's ability to recruit people, and typically one person, into their company for performance-based equity. Why is that so important? It's so important because if a founder can tell that story, can authentically and get a person involved with it authentically in their company, that message then typically transitions over to a marketing message to enable them to penetrate the market to get their first zealots. Those zealots then go on to end up funding that company in the beginning stages and end up becoming more of a mainstream product and enabling it to grow. So if you can't tell your story, and I'm not talking about a pitch deck, the BS with that crap, because that's a whole nother world. I'm talking about authentically telling why you started this company, what you're looking to do with it, and being able to convince and persuade someone else to join you on that journey, then you shouldn't be in business. That company should not be dealt with. It shouldn't come to life. If you can do that, then you're off to the races.
So, you know, when you look at, again, I know it's not your favorite Shark Tank, but you know, you look at people, even if it's not Shark Tank, we know that there's a bunch of other groups out there.
It's good entertainment.
Right. But when you think about someone like, say, like Mark Cuban, right? And he's investing in a bunch of different companies, and that's fine. People, I mean, set aside Shark Tank. Forget the TV aspect of it. But just any investor who is continuously investing in new companies, they're not always available, you know, to do the work. I mean, they have their executive team sort of taking care of the logistics, right?
Sure.
So how does that compare to Gusher in that if a CMO registers on there, can that CMO go out and be a fractional CMO to five companies? Or how do you minimize that?
That's funny because I was asked this question multiple times today and I haven't been asked it for months. So here's what happened. Here's what we've seen with the patterns. As Gusher has grown, that's literally happened more and more. So you end up seeing a person that acts literally as a fractional position, a fractional role for more than one startup. And usually it's the people that are very damn good at what they do and they come in with laser precision. So they can, and they usually know the vertical. So they'll typically stick with consumer goods if that's what they know, or they'll stick with B2B SaaS companies if that's what they know. And it's something that they don't have to sit there and really learn new things. They're bringing their expertise at that level right from the beginning, but we've seen it multiple times. We call it them, they're creating their own portfolio of companies. They're acting as their own VC in a way with their skill set, bringing it to those companies. And that's what they should do. That's what it has the ability to do with Gusher. Get involved with those companies that you know, based upon your experience, have a damn good shot at making it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I'm asking you that question just because it is a question that I've had in the past from startups and companies who are like, wait, but you and your company, you guys are doing this for 5-10 other companies. Are you going to have the time? And I say, well, you let the results speak for itself. And by the way,
yes,
if we don't hit certain KPIs and measures, then we forfeit the shares anyways, right?
Get the boot, right?
And so I think that, so are you guys doing the agreement part of it as well, Chris?
Sure. Yeah, we have something called an ESA, an equity share agreement. And okay, something took us about 18 months to go ahead and get crafted, and everything else took a very long time to get that agreement done. It's a work of art. It's a phenomenal agreement. It's been tested in more than 350 companies, but it's called the ESA. The Gusher ESA is the framework, the foundation for the exchanges on Gusher, for those roles and those people to join companies. Yes.
I like that. That's very important because, you know, when you're trying to put these deals together, it's like, I've got my lawyer, you've got your lawyer. Now we're out a couple $1,000 just to have a conversation.
Sure.
And if you already have this ESA in place, that kind of lowers the bar.
And what it does is, because we've seen the deal flows come and go and what works, what doesn't, that is a very well-crafted document. It prevents headaches on both sides. It's a very founder-centric document. You're not going to have a tail wagging the dog scenario and vice versa. So it's a very equal, fair, but founder-centric document, because the whole point of when you create a startup is to get that thing going, get that thing launched in the best possible way. And having had nightmare partner scenarios all along my career, that's the one thing we wanted to make damn sure that these founders avoided from the very beginning. So that document is very, very well crafted.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode on nightmare partners.
No, a couple days worth of that.
It's funny. I mean, having partnerships, I used to have a friend who owned a very large company and he said, oh, partnerships are sinking ships. That was his whole thing always. He never wanted to do partnerships. I'm like, listen, I think that's fine. That's a part of your thing. You felt like you needed full control and you never wanted, that's you. But for me, I have found that most of my partnerships have worked. Even if they have an ending, we move on, you pivot, whatever. Most of those partnerships have helped me as an entrepreneur grow.
Well, I feel like if you need the expertise of others, and who doesn't, that then you enter into those types of partnerships. But it's not the type of thing, and I don't believe in this. I don't believe in equal partnerships. All right. So any type of transaction that I'll go ahead and do, and also with the founders on Gusher, that's, again, one of the things we teach them. This is your baby, and proportionately, you should have a way majority control of that 80% at that stage. Because no matter what these other partners do, no one will take the same seriousness, the same passion, the same concern for what you're doing as you. So I believe in partnerships, but I don't necessarily believe in equal partnerships, unless they're bringing proportionately a hell of a lot.
That's true. And do you ever have to get involved, or your staff, or is it already set up in the sense like, okay, I'm the startup, I need, I don't know, CFOs, CMOs, whatever. Does that startup on there say, I also need you to come in with some funding, or is it just the performance-based equity?
On our platform, it's just performance-based equity. Having said that, about 15% of our companies end up getting taken out by an investment round at the team creation stage. All right. So that tells you how important a team is. So many times they end up getting their Series A right as soon as they create that team, which is kind of crazy. We never expected that type of thing to happen, but it has a very high portion of companies doing that.
Wow. So two more questions. Sure. What are the hottest roles? What are the hottest verticals?
Hottest roles are always CMO and CTO. So chief marketing officer, chief technology officer. They're worth their weight in gold. I personally think that UI UX designers for any software platform are worth more because UI UX typically makes or break you. When it comes to really the hottest industries, the consumer goods always rotate in and out, meaning that there's always something that, is hot in terms of consumer goods. Right now, we're dealing with a company with bean smashers. We're dealing with sustainable oat stuff, energy drinks that are taking off like a rocket. The dog food company is growing insanely. One of our dog food companies grew 92% last month, and they've got national distribution, everything else. Zero capital invested, yay. And they're taking off like a rocket. But we've seen a lot of AI companies now. AI companies are starting to hit. They're hitting all different verticals, all different ways. So we see AI really catching on. We don't know if it's necessarily a bubble yet. We think it's at the beginning stages. So not there. But the weak ones will shake out and the strong ones will end up winning. But a lot of AI companies recently.
All right. Perfect. Well, Chris, before we leave you or you leave us, sure. What advice, like what's your like top tip for a startup founder?
There's only one bit of advice, all right? And I don't say this lightly, and I'll say it in a little bit of a different way. We call it the roller coaster of awesomeness starting a company. There's only one person that can stop that roller coaster of awesomeness. Who is it?
You.
Damn right. So you just never give up. If you never give up, and I don't care. You may have to iterate. You may have to shift. If you never give up and you truly understand what that takes, you never give up. You will get there. That's all you need to know. You don't need to be the smartest person. You don't need to be the best. You don't need to be somebody with a ton of money in the bank or connections. You can have nothing. So long as you just don't stop, you will get there.
I love it, Chris. Thank you for giving us that inspiration. And you know, to the founders out there who are looking for different ways of building your team, and you're saying, "Man, I'm not finding the cash out there, the funding." I know, Gusher. I spent some time on the platform, and it was just blowing my mind. Me and some of my other founders were like, "Once I speak to Chris and I get through that, we're definitely going to get on the platform there." So for anyone out there trying to build a team, I did look at some of the profiles. Man, it's really incredible what you're doing, Chris. Such a big contribution to the world of entrepreneurship, something that is so needed.
Well, we believe that talent is spread evenly. Opportunity is not. We are fixing that because it's important.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.